Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Mark Chiarelli back on another of these Baseball America Prospect Deep Dives. Today, we're digging deep into the Pirates farm system that produced nationally Rookie of the Year Paul Skenes last year. Still pretty loaded at the top, especially on the pitching side. You know, we'll get into that. But we'll also get into kind of the question here of, there's a lot of guys who were on this list not that long ago who aren't prospects anymore, but also aren't really fully established big leaguers. We're not going to work through that as well. We'll dive into all of it here on the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Mark, good to see you. How are you doing? It's been not that long ago. We were doing the A's deep dive. Now we're doing the Pirates, which I feel like that the Pirates are, you know, if you're a Pirates fan, it's probably a very frustrating situation. Looking at it with a little bit more remove, a little bit less, you know, a little bit more clinically, there are some good things happening here. But then the question is okay, is that going to be enough to get them over the hump? It feels like pitching-wise, this team is in a better place than they've been. But now the question is will the lineup come along to join them?
Absolutely. I think it's one of the better pitching development situations across the league, personally. I mean, I know Skenes is an easy one to hang your hat on, but you also look at what happened with Jared Jones. You look at Mitch Keller's development, even once he got to the majors, is continued to get better. And then you look at this cavalcade of arms that are coming behind him, beginning with Bubba Chandler, who we ranked within the top 10 of our top 100, which went live in January. And, you know, we could spend the entire podcast just talking about interesting Pirates pitchers. So that, to me, was the most exciting part of reporting out this chapter for the handbook. But you do square it against, you know, in desperate need of a bat, in desperate need, even, I would say, of up the middle talent that you feel pretty good about that's within proximity of the majors. I think a lot of the interesting players in this system in terms of hitters are all Class A or below. So that's kind of the weakness here, and it creates an imbalance that I was going to ask you, honestly, as someone who has such a great feel of all 30 systems throughout the league, if you could think of another player development situation right now that is so good at one thing but struggling so much in the other. I was struggling to think of another comparison, maybe the Marlins, but it's just such a striking difference right now.
I would say the Braves would be the other one, but I think the Braves, it's very intentional. Like, if, again, the Braves have a problem that the Pirates would dream of having, which is if you have a catcher, a first baseman, a second baseman, a third baseman, a right fielder, and a center fielder locked up long term, then maybe it makes some sense to say, hey, we're going to kind of focus on the pitching side here because we really don't have any openings. I mean, that's not the Pirates situation here. I think the Pirates would be so well served by having another couple of bats. We're going to get to that, but I do think we have to start off with, this is, you know, number one prospect in the organization is Bubba Chandler. He seems poised to be the next Pirates pitching success story, but it also hasn't been a very linear path here. If you look at where Bubba Chandler was a couple of years ago to now, it feels like he has taken steps forward. What's changed, and kind of what, if you're a Pirates fan, what reasons are there to be optimistic that Bubba Chandler could be an impact starter?
Well, I think the optimism is the incredible year-over-year growth. And I think some of that had to have been expected, or you had to treat him with a certain amount of patience, given that he was a two-way prep guy. He had less pitching experience than others that you might expect of his stature or even of his raw ability. When you look at his fastball and hold it up against other fastballs in the minors. I think Jeff Ponce wrote this right around when we released our top 100, and he made a very compelling case that it's the best fastball in the minors. At the very least, it's one of them. You look at the spin efficiency, the carry through the zone, the velocity, the ability to hold that velocity and then throw it for strikes throughout the duration of a start. That's a really exciting foundation. I think with Chandler, they've harnessed his strike throwing and some of those athletic abilities much more effectively than early in his career. Second half of last year, you started to see him strike his slider with more consistency. And I think the slider is at least an above average pitch when all said and done. He's got a really good changeup. You know, he might be able to spend a little bit more time in 25 on his curveball and kind of round out that arsenal. But it's just the raw ability in the Pirates, to our point earlier on how they've developed pitchers. They've done a really good job narrowing in on what he does well and accentuating that.
The other thing with that is that I do feel like you mentioned about their pitching development, kind of the strides they've made. If this was 3-4 years ago, I think that if I was a Pirates fan listening to this, I'd go, oh yeah, okay, so that was also true with Mitch Keller and, you know, where is he now? And it was true with Gerrit Cole, and man, it took till Gerrit Cole left Pittsburgh to really kind of find another gear. And you could kind of go through that. But now we're talking about a time, okay, Paul Skeens is Paul Skeens. You took the guy who was the best college pitcher of maybe a decade, a generation, and he has been exceptional. But Jared Jones is a development success story. This is a prominent, you know, pitcher coming out of high school, another two-way guy coming out of high school, not particularly conventional, not the biggest guy in the world. And Jared Jones hit the ground running and has made an impact for the big league club. It does feel like that this is a team now where there is a higher likelihood, or there's a better path from minors to majors for their pitchers than there was a few years ago.
I think that's right. And I think to your point, the one thing holding them back from reaching S-tier status in terms of MLB pitching development is you like to see another one or two come through and really solidify themselves. I think it will happen with Chandler. It wouldn't shock me if he's in that rotation at a spring training. He's uber competitive. When he got to AAA, there's some sequencing, some polish, like all the things you'd expect from a pitcher of his age. But he was really effective down the stretch, and I think that he's got the pure stuff to settle into that rotation right out of spring training. I don't know if it'll happen, but I wouldn't bet against it. He might be next, and I know you want to get to a couple other arms, but
no, we're gonna stay on Bubba for a minute. I want to stay on Bubba for a minute because along those lines, you mentioned this is a guy who I think his development's actually been really fast when you consider his background. This is not someone who has basically been focused and driven on being a pitcher and only a pitcher since he was 12 or anything like this. This is a two-way guy who I think has publicly talked about how he had to figure out, like, okay, how do you do this as a starting pitcher? Being a starting pitcher is very different than being a two-way guy or being a position player where you show up every day and you say, okay, I'm going to play tonight. As a starting pitcher, you've got to figure out a routine. You've got to figure out, okay, how do I benefit from what I did last time, learn from it, build off of it? What am I working on my off days? How do I make sure I'm ready to go when the next start comes around? All those things. He's kind of picked up a lot of that pretty quickly, while also, I feel like you kind of touched on this, but like making improvements, you know, working with the Pirates on diagnosing like grounds for improvement. His fastball plays better now than it did a couple of years ago. It seems like his delivery's a little better. His arm, you know, his arm slot, all these things are really in a good place now. And again, I just kind of go back to, it wasn't that long ago, I felt like that there was a lot of these stories with the Pirates where it's like, okay, it seems like it's going in the wrong direction as they climb the ladder.
Yeah, I think so. When you think about Jared Jones, or even if you wanted to zoom out and answer the question as to why have they gotten so good or so much better at developing pitchers, I think the through line between Skeens and Jones and Chandler and some of these other guys, they're all very different pitchers. They're all really good athletes. Chandler is a insane athlete, really good football player. He's an ambidextrous golfer. He can dunk. Like he's always tests out right at the top in terms of all Pirates minor leaguers and in terms of just pure athleticism. Jones is kind of the same way. Like they have identified guys who move really well and then know how to work with them in, work with them in different ways. And I also think too, they're getting better at developing different types of pitchers. It's not as if they're looking for one thing all the time and getting really good at it. They're very different types of guys, but they're helping them get better at the things they're already good at. And it sounds simple when you say it out loud, but a lot of teams are not as good at, you know, at identifying that or developing that.
And let's be clear, the Pirates were really bad at that for a while, where it was like, I don't care how you came in, like the assembly line may have been gathering pitchers from all different areas, but they all kind of ended up seemingly down a narrow path. And then, you know, like when players would be traded, and then it'd be like, oh, now they're kind of, hey, this guy's a four seam guy who likes to live at the top of the zone. I wasn't given a chance to do that before, kind of thing.
Absolutely.
But so with Bubba, we said timetable is sometime in 2025. We'll see, you know, exactly when that is, but it's going to be this year, barring injury, we would say. The follow-up question of that, or the further question is okay, projecting it out. Paul Skeens is number one in this rotation. We can etch that in ink. A healthy Paul Skeens, no one's pushing him aside. Roki did not choose to sign with the Pirates, where at least we'd have the debate about that. So Skeens is the one. Is Jared Jones, is Mitch Keller, is Bubba Chandler, who's the likely number two if all these pitchers are, you know, pitching within a reasonable level of their possible ceiling, right? Not pie in the sky, not what Paul Skeens did last year, which is walk in and be the best starting pitcher, you know, in the National League for much of the year. But who's the best of that group if they're all performing reasonably well?
To me, it's Chandler, because with Jones, he's smaller. There was a little bit of an injury concern this past season. I really like Chandler's frame, the athleticism. I still feel like there's a reasonable amount for him to go before he starts even bumping up against whatever ceiling you want to put on him. Like he really hasn't been pitching that long, and he's already, you know, our second best pitcher in the top 100. And there's still clear improvements he could make with slider command, curveball. Like there's a lot that can still be done here. So for me, I think that Chandler is probably the safest of those three picks, and he'd be the one I'd lean on slightly ahead of Jared Jones.
With Jones, I think the biggest question is just like, it doesn't mean he can't do it, but he's smaller. Like there is the back of that mind, like, okay, is he going to be able to maintain this, sustain this at this level? But if he does, I mean, that's where this does get really interesting, because that's 3/4 frontline guys, really. I mean, again, which is a luxury to have for most teams. And then I don't want to ignore, like, kind of staying on the pitching side here, Thomas Harrington is also knocking on that door, right?
He is. Yep.
Where does he fit in all this?
He's probably the number five starter in the Pirates rotation, but I think in a lot of other organizations, he's solidly in number four, if not creeping up on number three status. Whereas Chandler just overwhelms you with physical traits, Harrington is going to kitchen sink you. He's going to be very precise. There's some concerns, I think, on fastball velocity and just kind of the overall quality of the fastball once it gets to the major leagues. But he's got a much more well-rounded arsenal, added a split changeup in 2024, one of the best strike throwers in all of the minors. He could settle into the back of the rotation relatively quickly as well and kind of provide you a higher floor there. And then the other one too is Ashcraft, who we haven't talked about as much. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, but I had people in the offseason tell me that, you know, Ashcraft, you could make a case he's the number one guy in the system just based off of pure stuff. I think there's the durability there and the lack of a changeup to me. That's a little hot. Bubba. But I think that's more to contextualize how excited I got some reports that I got just in terms of fastball quality, two separate potentially plus sliders. Like Ashcraft is another guy with AAA experience who is kind of encroaching here on major league time.
And this is, again, like every team is going to need seven, eight, in the Dodgers case, 13 guys to get through a season as starters, nine, you know, so it's something where having starting pitching depth is, I would say, vital to a team, especially, let's just be honest, to a team that is not going to be going out there and saying, oh, okay, who's the best, you know, expensive starter on the market at the trade deadline or things like that. So that's all very encouraging. By the way, you know, as we kind of go through this, we like to point out, if you're enjoying this, do check out baseballamerica.com. A ton of great content like this. If you're interested in the Pirates, there is a ton to read there, including full scouting reports on all top 30 prospects in the Pirates organization. We've updated them with all the international signings for all 30 organizations from January 15th. We have tools grades. We have BA grades. We're expanding as you're watching this. We're getting ready to expand it to top 40. We have farm system rankings. We also have the college top 25. We have an updated draft top 200 prospects for 2025. If you want to get your work in and start prepping for who your team is going to be looking at, all that over at baseballamerica.com. We'd love for you to join us as a Baseball America subscriber. In addition to being a YouTube subscriber, we thank you all the many people who've been joining our YouTube channel. We love it. We're keeping it up. Like, that helps encourage us to keep this up and keep reporting new deep dives every day. There's a lot of work involved in these, but we really do enjoy them. But that kind of is my little segue here, Mark, to get to the bats. And if it's a really encouraging time for the pitching staff, I would say that, you know, that the part, the question that we have with the Pirates right now is what is this lineup going to look like in 25? What's it going to look like in 26? What's it going to look like in 27? And I think there's a lot more unknowns there, aren't there?
Absolutely. There's only one player in this top 10, and for us, I guess you could zoom it out to top 12, top 13, who you feel pretty good will make an impact on the major league lineup in 2025, and that's Nick York. There's another bat in the top 10 that we're going to get to, Tamar Johnson, who might be one of the most polarizing prospects or hitting prospects right now in the minor leagues. But you can't hang your hat on too many upper-level guys in the system who have a clear shot, who are prospect eligible, at least, to impacting this team in 2025.
And they need impact. That's the other part of this is that this is the team. So, okay, so let's start with, we're going to start kind of by working towards through the prospects who were prospects. Because the thing that does stand out about this, like, we don't know whether Andy Rodriguez is going to be, you know, ready to be the full-time catcher, whether he'll win that job. There's a lot of catchers battling for that job. But we shouldn't forget about him, even if he's no longer prospect eligible, because I would lay out that kind of the best case scenario for the Pirates is that Andy Rodriguez, coming off of basically a lost season because of injury, plays a vital role for the Pirates in 25, 26, and 27. Is that like, is there someone that, you know, kind of these recently prospect group or on the cusp of big league group that you think could be more impactful for them? Or is it Andy?
I think it's Andy, but I do want to give you the full list because when I started to run through it, I said, man, there are a lot of guys who are no longer eligible for this list who have yet to cement themselves. You've got Andy Rodriguez. You've got Henry Davis. They just picked up Emmanuel Valdez. You've got Leover Paguero, Jack Sawinski, Ji-Won Bae. All of those guys prominently ranked at one time in the top 30 in our handbook are no longer prospect eligible and have not reached I would say have not reached expectation across the board.
And could I add to that list Joey Bart, who I know was a Giants prospect, not a Pirates, but like Joey Bart, who was the number two pick in the draft not that many years ago and is now kind of fitting into this in some ways. You know, we talk about Nick Gonzalez, who's graduated, but like is a kind of a in semi-regular role, but I wouldn't say like has basically staked a claim to second base and it's like no one is ever going to take this from me. You know, we have O'Neill Cruz, who is basically the Pirates' star in many ways, but moved positions, you know, from shortstop to center field mid-season last year. And I would say because of that, there are some questions. And then Ke'Bryan Hayes, who is their third baseman, is the Pirates' third baseman, but hasn't taken that step forward offensively to go with the defense. There's a lot of players here who are prominent, who were recently prominent prospects, but it is a group of guys who you say, like, okay, how does this all fit together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and to answer your initial question, Endy's the player of that group I remain most bullish on, just based on what we saw from him as a prospect. Last year was more injury than anything. It wasn't like he had a Henry Davis-esque season where you couldn't play him in the majors. You had to send him back to AAA. I think the Pirates' answer to your question might be Henry Davis, just based off of where they drafted him. And I think he best case scenario is yet another example of someone who just needed more time to adjust to the gap between AAA and the majors. But he's also number three on that catching pecking order right now with no clear path, at least right now, to me, to being an impactful major leaguer to open the season. But I, of that group,
do they believe in him as a catcher enough? Like, that's part of the question is like, is his role with them long-term as a catcher slash outfielder, or as an outfielder?
I think it's trending towards either right field or, you know, perhaps first base. They're saying the right things this winter, but Joey Bart seems pretty entrenched, right, at number one. And I think you look at Endy's kind of overall athleticism, his bat to ball. There are some skills there that I would feel a little bit better about, even if he was my backup catcher for now, or they work their way into a timeshare, than I feel about Henry Davis right now.
And this is a team that also has Jason DeLay to kind of serve as that, like, either, you know, that true, just your standard run-of-the-mill backup big league catcher where you're like, yeah, he's okay defensively. You know, not much more than that, but he is that. And so I do think that that's like, when you look at this, there are a couple of positions that have log jams, and we kind of tie this in with the prospect side. Catcher's one. Like you said, you got Bart, you've got Endy, you've got Henry Davis. That's a lot of prospect capital, recent prospect capital there to figure out. And then you've got second base, where you've got Nick Gonzalez, who we talked about a little bit. You've got Nick York, who, I mean, I think he probably ends up fitting more in the outfield for them, but was acquired in the offseason, a prominent Red Sox prospect not that many years ago, traded, you know, for Quinn Priester in a deal which basically was, I'm not damning Nick York with this, but the Red Sox, I think, looked at it and said, okay, it's time to put him on the 40. Look at all these guys who are ahead of him on our depth chart, and he's not going to fit for us ever. At second base, he's behind, you know, basically 2, 3, 4 guys. In the corner outfield spots, he's behind 2, 3, 4 guys. Hey, let's flip him for Quinn Priester. Now, the opportunity is much more here, you know, with the Pirates. But you look at second base slash left field, there are a lot of these guys, aren't there?
They just keep showing up. It's like you turn around and Adam Frazier's here, Valdez is here. It's like they have an affliction with second baseman who might be able to also play left field. With the trade-off.
We have to throw Billy Cook into that too.
Billy Cook's in the mix. I don't know. We might get off this pod, and there might be another one who shows up. In the trade-off being shortstop is so light. You know, like, I know they moved O'Neill Cruz to center field, and it looks like that's a long-term home for him. But behind him, there's not a center fielder coming up that you know. It's just the up the middle. You mentioned catcher, but shortstop, center field. It's just it's really, really lean right now.
I should also note Spencer Horowitz played 39 games at second base for the Blue Jays last year. I don't think that they're looking. I think they're just saying you're our first baseman, but like, he's another one of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great addition. When you look at this team, I think maybe it was Matt Eddy who said it recently, you know, you're really just looking for 1.5 win, 2 win, just reliable guys you can slot into this lineup. And I know you've made the point, you know, that matters. It matters more than people might think to plug in 2 win guys. But it's just steadiness that has just evaded this roster, or this lineup, I should say, for the last 2 years. So Horowitz, as much as I loved Luis Ortiz and I'm a big believer in him, that's a great trade. I think York's another example of flipping the capital you've amassed with pitching and going out and trying to plug your holes. I think they should look at doing, you know, more of that. There's plenty of pitching depth here to continue to be aggressive and try to find more bats who are close to the majors.
And we haven't even talked about the second baseman that we probably need to spend the most time talking about. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So we're talking about second basemen and whether guys who may stay at second base. We got to talk about Tremar Johnson, who is, I would say, remains the most interesting of all these prospects we're talking about, because there are some things that Tremar Johnson does very well. He gets on base. He's always gotten on base. And then there's the question, and we hear it. We hear it from Pirates fans a lot. And again, we like to, you know, we like to try to explain what our thought process is. So Mark, kind of explain the pluses and minuses and the challenge of ranking Tremar Johnson, both in the Pirates list and then when we talk about the top 100 and things like that. Where does Tremar Johnson stand right now?
So I think the challenge with Tremar, not only for us, but I would say the evaluators who have watched him over the last year or two, is that he is not the guy you expect. And that it creates such a dissonance for people, because you are expecting the 70 grade raw hit tool that was put on him in the draft. You're expecting the bat to ball skills, the contact ability. That has not materialized consistently throughout his professional career. You will see it. You'll see it in spurts, but you will also see spurts where he's, you know, too passive. He's rolling over pitches. It is not, he's not been the hitter that people expected him to be. There is power there. It's lightning fast bat speed. You'll throw on synergy. You will throw on and look at some of his pull side homers, and you'll say that is a thing of beauty. You know, he's very capable of it. And I think that's the challenge and the frustrating part. Well, you'll see a top 100 prospect, and you'll see a guy who looks like he could be a fixture in this lineup. And then he'll go a week or two at a time where he's not making the right swing decisions, or he's too passive, and it just creates frustrations. And I think, where I netted out, and I'd be curious to get your thought here too. I know we talked about it in the ranking process. A lot of the offensive value right now, or the production, is rooted in the on-base skills. And I'm very curious what's going to happen when he gets to the upper minors this year for a long period of time and better pitchers start to attack the passivity. You know, I think the Pirates would love to see him swing a little bit more. Then the question is, what kind of contact is that? You know, can he trade a little bit of power or seeking power for just putting the ball in play a little bit more? That's kind of the balance going on right now with Johnson and why he's kind of an enigma.
The thing I would say with that is when I've tried to study this, there's what different ways to get to on base. And I think it's useful to think of on base percentage in the minors a little different than on base percentage in the majors, right? Someone who hits 250 with a 360 on base in the majors year after year after year, or 270, 370, whatever, that 100-point plus spread, that's incredibly valuable. And I would say generally also relatively durable. I would say, like, the players who do that, they don't luck into that. They do that because they have a really good selective sense of the strike zone and all that. When you look at this at the minor league level, when I've tried to study it and looking at high OBP guys and trying to basically divide them in a couple of buckets, the guy, let's just say the guys who get to 390 on base, right? And so there's the bucket of guys who, the players who get to 390 on base because they hit 330, right? And then there's in the minors. And there's the other bucket of run of the mill, which no one gets to run of the mill 390, but he hits 290, 280, 290 with a 390. Would you say like a pretty typical high OBP guy? And then there's what Tomar's been so far, which is the guy who posts that really high on base percentage, but does it with a average or below average batting average, right? The 240, 390 guy. In best, I need to keep studying it, but in best, when I study it, what I come up with is that is less projection to the big leagues that's going to maintain than the guys who hit 330 with 390, because the low walk rate, high batting average, high OBP guy, right? They're doing that in the minors because their bat to ball skills are just so elite that they haven't even been taught the point yet of like, this is how you have to get to it. The lesson has not come to them yet because they just cruise through the low minors and it's like, I'm hitting 350. Why should I like they're getting to a solid hit well before they get to ball three. And it takes until they get closer to the majors. But then as they do, doesn't always work this way, but a lot of those guys will eventually go like, oh, now this pitcher's doing this. I have elite bat ball. I can handle this. And so the batting average goes down, but the OBP stays up. Like you said, the guys who are doing it with low batting average a lot of times, what that is you could walk to the plate in a ball without a bat and passivity will get rewarded. Now, I'm not saying Tomar's always passive, but if you are, I'm going to take my walks if they give them to me. Class A pitchers will give you a lot of walks. And so as you climb the ladder, you see with more of those guys, as the skill level of the pitchers increases, those walks start to go away. And the reason you are hitting 230, 240, 250 a lot of times is because there are other issues there that don't improve as you go up the list. Now, doesn't mean you can't. Tomar Johnson is still a young prospect. And again, I will always say like one of the best pure hitters I've seen on the amateur ranks in my times doing this, but that is where I would say we have a concern. But the second part I want to get to on that is, okay, now let's talk about defensively. Where does Tomar Johnson fit defensively? We talked about this logjam of second baseman that the Pirates have. Is he the best of this group or is he most likely to stick there? Or is he a guy who could end up in the outfield as well?
No, I think actually after 2024, I feel more optimistic, if anything, about his ability to stick at second base. And part of the calculus, you mentioned York. York, to me, is potentially their right fielder out of spring training. Like, I think York he's not the best runner, but he has a chance to be capable in right field, clear up this logjam. Tomar actually made strides defensively, looked a little bit more comfortable. He doesn't have the range to get to the left side of the infield, or at least I haven't found anyone outside of the Pirate system who thinks that. But I do think that there's a pretty clear path to him being a perfunctory second baseman, someone who's there and it's 45-50 defense with an okay arm and, you're open for him to hit. That seems very plausible to me.
So again, like I don't want to go overboard on how important 2025 is for Tomar Johnson, but I do feel like that at the end of this season, having, a year where he spends the entirety of the year in the upper minors, we are going to know a lot more about where Tomar Johnson is. You know, maybe again, we're not re-root for prospects. Maybe all those readers who yell at us and say we're underranking Tomar, maybe we'll say, you're right, we're moving him back up because of what he's doing. Or this is going, but I feel like that this is a very crucial year for him. Is that fair?
100%. I mean, we're two full years, 2022 draft. And I get the reasons to be optimistic, like he's young, there's patience. There is the ability in there. Time to show it.
There's so much here with Pirates. This is an interesting farm system always. I don't want to go away without at least touching on a couple other guys. We mentioned Billy Cook briefly. He's an interesting one because he was picked up from the Orioles. And I feel like this is, there's a chance that this is a really good job by the Pirates of identifying a player here. Because Cook was a guy who was kind of a little bit less prominent in the Orioles system, comes over, and the Pirates were pretty clear from day one. They really liked what they were getting here. What do they possibly have here in Billy Cook?
really loud supplementary tools. Louder than even I realized. You know, I didn't do a ton of work on Cook before he got to the Pittsburgh system. He has a really strong throwing arm, and he can really run. And there's some power there. The big question, will the strikeouts remain manageable enough for him to be a useful kind of super utility type? Now, he can play a corner outfield position. He can play first base. He can play second base. Shocker. I think he's a piece that moves around for them. But in light of the conversation we had about, not too many guys upper minors are pushing on the majors, he is one. And I don't know if he breaks camp with them. It's a crowded bench. It's a crowded kind of utility outlook here for the Pirates. But I'm arrow up on Cook because of the overall athleticism and the skill set. He did make some strides in terms of making more contact, although the strikeouts flared back up when he got to the majors and debuted last year. But still, when you look back on it, trending in the right direction.
And the other one I just really don't want to skip over is this, like, we haven't even talked about their first round pick. It was a prominent first round pick, Connor Griffin, who, to go back to kind of just wrap this up, we're not going to spend too much time on him because we still have other topics we'll get to. But you mentioned the lack of up the middle guys, especially, let's take catcher out of it. They got some catchers to work through, but shortstops, center field types, third base, coming up behind Cabrian Hayes. Is Connor Griffin that guy? Like, or is that they hope he's that guy. We hope that we'll see that he's that guy, but obviously he was also just drafted last year.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it with the last part. We didn't see a whole lot of him. He participated in some bridge leagues, some instructs, but not too many external evaluators got long looks at Connor Griffin. I think that the Pirates are obviously optimistic that they can get the hit tool to a point where the rest of the profile is so dynamic. He's going to start the year, I believe, at shortstop, or at least they're going to give him a chance to stick at shortstop. There are a lot of people who would put it more 50-50 that he ends up in center field just because of how good of a runner he is, how good of an arm he has. I mean, he was up to mid-90s off the mound as a pitcher in high school. It's a plus arm. I wouldn't be shocked if at the end of the day, it's center field and not shortstop for Griffin, but it's the hit tool. I feel like we're going to know pretty quickly whether this is a guy who could maybe surge up our top 100 or a guy where it's going to be a little bit longer of a burn. And we've spent a decent amount of time on this podcast talking about other high profile Pirates hitters who have not panned out or have not hit to the level that people have expected. So I think there's, you'd be very fair to be skeptical of the Connor Griffin selection, but you're not going to find too many guys in any system with the type of power, speed, defensive upside that Griffin brings to the table.
So before we wrap this up, two more topics. One is, I think that we, if you're going to talk about the Pirates and we talk about Pirates fans, I would say the biggest frustration, the biggest understandable frustration is revolved around ownership. And when you look at how much the Pirates spend now and you compare that to how much they spent in 2015, 16, 17, we know that revenues across baseball have gone up. We know that. Now, I know that there's RSN issues and all that, but overall revenues in baseball have gone up over the last decade. And the Pirates' payroll has not. I mean, it's gone down and now it's coming back up, but it's still not even at the level it was, 8-9 years ago. And I bring that up, especially at this time, because a couple of years ago, you could look at this team and say, yes, you could spend money to make them better, but they're really bad. But you look at this team right now, and I'm not saying that Anthony Santander would have signed with the Pirates slam dunk. Oh, I've always dreamed of being in Pittsburgh, but man, I can't help but look at a guy like him. And there are other free agents who are out there and say, how different would this team that has Skeens, that has Keller, that has Jones, that has Bubba basically arriving, that has O'Neill Cruz now, that still has Brian Reynolds. How helped would this team be by adding one, not, we hope to unlock this guy type guy, but a real middle of the order type bat of some sort. Am I going overboard and saying like this was a team that was really, I felt like in this offseason, kind of in dire need of making one of those moves? And I'm sorry, Spencer Horowitz, but that's not the move I'm talking about. Like, nice move, but is this team still a bat or two or three short? Or, you know, or is it something where this makes a little sense where they are in kind of their cycle of development?
No, I think it's a shame. You know, that you can't take Skeens for granted. You can't. I think you might have wrote it earlier this year. You know, he could be a Hall of Fame pitcher that we get to watch for 15 years, but he also is very powerful, relies a lot on his velocity. These could be the best years, you know? Like, you cannot take for granted what you have in him, what you have in Jones, what's coming in Chandler. I was going through prep for this wondering, like, why was Ha-Seong Kim, like, why is that not someone that you're interested in or taking a shot on? What was it, 2 for 29 that he signed with the Rays? Like, when you look at the shortstop outlook here, why is that not someone that you're at least connected to in the process? Or even if Santander, and you don't want to go 5 years, Tyler O'Neill.
Why wouldn't Austin you? They're not spending a ton of money elsewhere right now.
Yeah, like, it's just, I don't think you're that far away from wildcard contention. Really, no one is. And that's, I mean, you can zoom this out to a lot of different organizations in terms of maybe not going for it to the level they should be. But yeah, I'm absolutely with you. And I think the other part of it too, spending, every team makes mistakes in the draft. We've talked a lot about draft picks that haven't lived up to expectations so far. The Pirates don't have the lever to pull to cover up those mistakes, or they haven't yet. And that's why it looks as glaring as it does right now. I think the one thing I would say though, I think ownership is far and away, and spending is it's not up to where it needs to be. The Pirates do staff pretty well on the player development side. They have a lot of coaches. They put resources in there. You're seeing it on the pitching side. So I think there's some improvements to be made there that are independent of spending or resources as well that need to turn around. But yeah, it completely fair to look at this lineup and look at ownership and wonder why more dollars are not being spent at this point in the winter.
And I say that, I just bring that up because, again, this is a team that won 76 games in 23 and then won 76 games last year again. But I would say that they did so kind of in different ways, where like 76 wins 2 years ago was a step forward and we saw some signs of promise. 76 wins last year, which does put you on that cusp of like, okay, just a couple more moves. I'm not saying this is not exciting when you say, oh, the dream of getting to 85. But if you're in that 85 win range, then a little bit of good luck, you know, a little bit of, oh, we won some more one-run games than we should have, puts you in the playoffs, which is really important for a team. Because, by the way, if you're in a three-game series and you're Pittsburgh and you say, okay, guys, Paul Skeens is on the mound for game one, I don't care who we're facing, we think we got a chance. And then you said, okay, what about game two? It's Jared Jones, or it's Bubba Chandler, or it's even Mitch Keller. Again, you still like your chances. You want more. They need more thump in the lineup. But this is a team that you don't want to face Paul Skeens in a best of three. That's something fun. And that's, to me, that's fun. And that's, to me, something where you look at this and say, and maybe, again, there still could be moves that are made. But as we're recording this, it just looks like that this is a team where you say, okay, I'm glad they brought Andrew McCutchen back, but they need another outfielder. They need, ideally, IKF as your multi-position, versatile utility guy now probably fits better than as he's your all, you know, your shortstop every day. There's a lot of kind of like that where it's like, you know, would that make a Ke'Bryan Hayes better if he's like, I'm the sixth best bat in this lineup? I don't know, but that's kind of, I want to end this on a more positive note than that. So let's wrap this up by looking at who is someone outside of the top 10. You know, we're going to say use outside of the top 10 as kind of a lesser known prospect, a prospect who's not been talked about a ton. Who's someone who jumps out to you? It's like, keep an eye on this guy, because there's something here that could all come together.
Well, can I cheat and give two? Because I think you might yell at me for the first one. Because my first answer is not exactly a risk because he's ranked 11th in our top 30 right now. But it's Johnny Severino, third baseman. He's someone that I spent a lot of time agonizing over whether we could find a home for him in the top 10. I think when you look at Pirates prospects who are not in the top 100, who could be by the end of the season, he'd be a great pick. It's dynamic power from the left side. He crushes fastballs. He represents a type of hitter that this system doesn't have in terms of an offensive-oriented. He's at shortstop now. It's probably third base, but he's only, you know, he's really young, kind of aced his first test this past year. He's a good example of identifying him at the deadline when they traded Carlos Santana to the Brewers, brought back someone that they've started to work with and started to unlock. He's one for me that's really exciting. There's some bat path things, and he's got to handle breaking pitches a little bit better. So some stuff you might expect from a teenage hitter who just reached low A at the end of last year for the first time. But he's one for me who, you know, big time blinking red light breakout. And then we've talked so much about pitchers. I'd be remiss not to mention Carlson Reed, who's stuffed kind of midway into the top 30 right now. He might be that next Pirates arm to pop. It's two distinct fastballs. He's 6'5", really long arms, gets great extension on his two-seamer. His sweeper, probably the best in the system. He's over foot side a break. Those two pitches work so well in tandem, and then his changeup also got better. He's one, and I know, JJ, I'm talking to Mr. Strike Percentage. He needs to throw more strikes, you know, and we say that all the time. But the raw ability there is pretty interesting as a converted reliever in college to starter now. If they can just get him around the zone a little bit more, and they may add another pitch this year too, Reed to me might be that next starting pitching prospect in the Pirates system. Outside of the top 10 right now, takes a big leap.
A lot to dive into. Again, if you're a Baseball America subscriber, head over to baseballamerica.com. We have full scouting reports on all top 30 prospects, expanding that to 40 at the end of this week. And in addition to that, you know, tools grades, BA grades as well, and a lot more. Like if you want to dive deeper into this, we have stories on many of these players. We've talked about a lot of these players in depth. We have trade analysis when Billy Cook came over, things like that. A lot over at baseballamerica.com. And I hope that you're really enjoying these MLB prospect deep dives. We are rolling along. We're going to have one of these for all 30 organizations. So if you've made it this far in the Pirates one because you just love all of these, but your team hasn't been done yet, don't worry. We're getting there. We're trying to knock them out. We're trying to knock out 4 to 5 a week. So we know that we'll get these done before spring training is over. And we do appreciate all the response we've gotten. Please like and subscribe. Click that bell so you know whenever we're going to have new. We are trying to now announce these as premieres also every morning at 9 a.m. So if you come in and you're wondering who's going to be the team tomorrow, we're hopefully going to give you a little sneak peek of it in addition to a lot of other coverage. And by the way, if you're downloading the podcast, we also really appreciate it. You know, we want to keep that, you know, that podcast feed rolling. And please like, and if you can, offer a review on your favorite podcast platform. It helps us out and helps more people see and listen to the podcast. For Mark, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.